On this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide, Matty Lee, Gordon Wittenmeyer, and I discuss the impending non-tender deadline, some of the things the Cubs might have to be better at going forward.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Let's play two.
Back! Way back! It might be! It could be! It is! Holy cow!
The fly! He scores! Cubs win!
Ball! Game! Over! Cubs win!
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast, sponsored by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide, with Gordon Wittenmeyer, Matty Lee, our Cubs insiders, our great producers. That would be Tony Gill and Jeff Nelson. I'm David Kaplan, and you guys should know I'm sitting in a sauna while I'm taping this with you. I just wanted to kind of decompress from some day-to-day things in my life, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to sit in the sauna while I do this.
Thank God we're allowed to be remote.
Exactly. By the end of this thing, I'll be soaked in sweat. All right, let's talk about Jed Hoyer promoted 15 different people yesterday around the organization. Craig Breslow's VP of the pitching infrastructure, and they've got two. He and another gentleman named Green. I think it's Steve Greenberg.
No, that's my old colleague at the Sun-Times, Jeff.
Jeff Greenberg. Steve is the old colleague. They are both assistant GMs, but Jed has said he's going to look for a GM candidate potentially outside the organization to get a different perspective, a different voice. I'm going to ask you guys both this. Kim Ng was just hired by the Marlins. Did the Cubs strike out by not trying to make an overture to her? Do they have any reason to have done that if they don't know her? What do you guys think?
I think that was the perfect hire. They screwed up. And you can blame it on Theo, or you can blame it on ownership. You can blame it on whoever you want. Cap, you reported that Theo was out the door the first week of October. He told us he'd been thinking about it since the summer. If they knew that, Kim Ng didn't get hired by Derek Jeter and the Marlins until the end of October. They could have brought her in. They could have. You talk about a voice from the outside. You talk about probably the most qualified potential candidate out there. And you knew you were going to have this opening. And Jed's made a point. He wants a different voice, not just somebody from inside, not just somebody from their sort of Theo tree. And this would have been perfect. And by the way, and Maddie, I'll kick it over to you. I mean, anybody that doesn't know how qualified she is, read Maddie's story on NBC Sports Chicago. It's outstanding.
Well, I would probably tell you, Maddie, that I went back and I looked up not every single one, but a lot of the GM hires over the last 10 years. She's probably the most qualified candidate to get a GM job. And if she wasn't a female, she would have had a job years and years ago. And I give Derek Jeter a lot of credit for hiring her. This was no, like, well, let's break the glass ceiling. She's insanely qualified.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Gordon alluded to, I just finished up the story where I talked to a bunch of her teammates and women that she'd coached at UChicago. And even back then, when, you know, she was just A in college and then B while she was working with the White Sox, just had these incredible leadership qualities that have clearly carried through her whole career. And like you said, Cap has been in baseball for so long. I think anyone that would have hired her in the last, she's been interviewing for GM positions for the last 15 years. I think anyone that would have hired her in that time span would have been extremely happy. I like the idea for Jed with bringing in someone from the outside, since so much of the front office is staying the same from the last era. And, you know, Theo always says after 10 years, you need a bit of a change. And so, yes, Jed's a little bit of a change, but bringing in an outside perspective as GM, that's going to be the real change in this, you know, shift over to Jed as president of baseball operations. I think, I don't know if Kim was on the Cubs radar at all, although everyone in baseball knows about her and has had some, you know, dealings with her over the years, since she was such a bright star, even from, you know, her early days in this industry. Ooh, and my dog feels very passionate about this as well.
Yeah. Sure.
Sorry. Talk about an outside voice.
Oh yeah.
But hey, that's the beauty of working at home.
He's pissed off. He's so mad that no one has hired Kim Ng as GM until this year. I wonder if it had to do with whether she was on their radar at all, which she should have been, or B, if they just didn't realize that the Marlins were going to snap her up, because I mean, so much of her interviewing career has been leaked to the media. This one seemed to come out of nowhere. Obviously there's a relationship. This has been building. I'm sure they had plenty of talks beforehand, but wasn't really public knowledge up until they announced that they were hiring her.
Yeah. Let me throw, can I say
this to you? What if Jed said to you, yeah, we actually did kick the tires, but she was down the road with Derek and they have a relationship and we respect.
Do you believe that? I don't believe that. You?
I'm not saying I believe that they talked to her, but it may have been, you know, a fait accompli. That's where she's going. Derek and she are a very, very good relationship, and she may not have any kind of a relationship other than in passing with Jed or Theo or the Ricketts or whoever it is.
Throughout the process here, whether it was when Theo left or when Jed had his Zoom session and he took over, it sounded from all parties, including Tom, that this was done in a step-by-step way, that it was Theo making his decision, having his conversation, then leaving, then Jed being elevated, then Jed getting his extension, then Jed deciding that he was going to have a GM and that was going to be from the outside. It sounds like this wasn't something that was thought of back then. They just didn't go there yet back then is what it sounds like. And I want to throw something else in. Not only should they have gone there, if they want to make their organization stronger and if outside voices matter, and it should, because they've made some mistakes, especially in the last 3 or 4 years when it comes to player development and scouting and some of the decisions at the big league level, we can go down the road. But Theo's the guy who during the draft was it July this year? I can't remember when they did the draft this year, late June or July. It was after the George Floyd murder and all the protests. And he made a point to get with Kenny Williams and some other front office people around the game. And that televised draft became sort of a statement for baseball too. Black Lives Matter and unity. They made and I'll just say it, they made a production out of it on opening day, which we can debate how sincere that was, given that it went away just as fast as it got there from a corporate level. But Theo talked about looking in the mirror and about his practice, whether it was subconscious or not, of hiring people that looked and thought like him. This would have been the ultimate way to go out the door. And I'm not saying it would have been his decision to make, but for him to start a process on the way out that might have been inclusive, or at least to have brought up this process, or at least holistically from a Tom, Theo, Jed organizational standpoint to think proactively and early enough in this process to make it all one process. And I, because they didn't do that in my mind, and I assume that they did not talk to Kim Ng, they lost an opportunity probably at what might have been their best GM candidate.
Yeah, I think whether or not Kim Ng was on their, hiring Kim Ng was on their radar, you can blame Theo for the timing. And, you know, I think this was a long process of having these conversations, of figuring out what the right timing was, all of that. I'm not in the room for that. But if he had been earlier, and you know that, you know, the Marlins are out looking for GM, there are other teams who have openings in the front office. So if you wait, you're gonna automatically miss out on candidates. And we'll see if Jed, what kind of hire Jed does make, and if he is able to bring in a real different sort of perspective. Because he didn't even commit to hiring someone before this coming season, because he said he wanted it to be the right place, the right person at the right time. And I think you make a great point, Gordon, that the right person at the right time might have been Kim Ng a month ago.
So,
yeah. Amen.
Where do you think Jed goes? Do they keep the, I don't know what a GM job in Chicago pays. I'm going to guess $1 million, but you know, somewhere in that vicinity, do they pocket the million and go, you know what, we're going to go this year without a GM? I've got Greenberg and Breslow and all these other people that are over there. Or do you think they bring an outside voice in, whoever that person is?
I think they bring somebody in, because I think if they didn't plan to, and what I mean by obviously bring somebody in short term, you know, between now and the start of the season, whenever that might be. If they weren't planning to do that, I think it would have been easy enough to say that we're not planning to do that, or to paint the picture of that being one of the likelihoods. They didn't even go there. They just made it sound like it was going to be a deliberate process and take as long as it might take, but that they fully intended, that Jed fully intends to go down the road and at some point here start looking at candidates and interviewing them. There's a Jared Porter who used to be in their organization. He's an assistant out there now who he might be one of those guys they look at. Although I think that would go against the grain of everything Jed said, because that would be like hiring from the inside almost, but his name gets thrown out there. It'll be interesting to see how wide a net they cast.
Okay, so now we are taping this. It's Tuesday, the 1st of December. Tomorrow is the non-tender deadline. It certainly sounds like Chris Bryant will be tendered a contract. Doesn't mean that they won't trade him, but they will have control of him for one more year. Where do you guys think they are on Schwarber? Obviously, Almora will get non-tendered. And what else do you think is going to drop tomorrow?
Well, for all of those people listening on Wednesday when this stuff comes down, trust me, you're hearing it here first.
Yeah.
Almora will be non-tendered. And I think that I think Schwarber is a very, very likely non-tender candidate.
Yeah, I think he's certainly the most likely of the core, especially now that it really seems like Chris Bryant will end up being tendered a contract. But I've been saying on this podcast all along, I think that's the right move. I think you can get value out of him in a potential trade, whether that's now or at the deadline.
I agree. And there's also the massive, massive embarrassment factor. If you non-tender Chris Bryant in his seventh year, you get rid of him right ahead of the seventh year with the club that you assured of happening because you manipulated his service time in year one and created this bad blood that wound up in a grievance hearing last year. So it would just be utter embarrassment for the organization if you get 6 years into that after doing that to him, and now you're just going to non-tender. Just go. Here's your release. Thanks for the 6 years.
Well, the way I look at it, I still think Jed is in cut money mode rather than talent acquisition mode.
No doubt.
And I think that's the way he's going to approach things until he feels like there's bargains out there he can get at the end of January. You guys,
never mind bargains until he has money. I mean, he's in the red right now when it comes to this budget. They were over the luxury tax threshold. So even if there wasn't pandemic economics, they were staring at getting under the threshold or else have draconian consequences in terms of draft picks and other penalties. So they had to cut anyway. And now because of the pandemic economics and the biblical friggin' losses that they incurred this year, we're talking about massive cuts. If they were at $196 million in major league payroll, now we know that the luxury tax payroll is calculated different, includes 40-man roster guys and insurance and all that, but roughly $196 million of major league money, that might have to come all the way down to, let's just say, 150. And they got a ways to go to make that happen. And you talk about cutting mode. I mean, never mind bargains. I mean, who's he going to get to take some of this salary off his hands?
Yeah, well, and I think we can't keep – we've got to keep in sight that also if he is able to leverage some of these core guys for prospects, you can save money down the line too. Or if it's not saving money, it's keeping pushing money aside so that you can use that for a big time free agent when you're, you know, back in a win World Series mode.
Well, don't forget this too, that we talk about, you know, what can they get for these guys? It whatever they trade Bryant for, unless they get really creative, multi-teams, multiplayer packages, that kind of thing, it's going to be really hard to get something back and get somebody to pick up all of his salary for next season, which is going to be in the $19 to $20 million range. And complicating that is Wednesday's non-tender deadline, because whatever that free agent class looks like before that deadline, it is going to look radically different after that. There's going to be all kinds of very useful players that are available without having to give up a prospect, and probably for much, much less money in terms of just being able to fill a gap for you for a year before, you know, until you can know that you're going to start making money again on the other side of the vaccines and this pandemic.
Yeah. I actually read something this morning that said the Cubs had really gone down the road a year ago at this time to try and land a deal with the Nationals, sending Chris Bryant to Washington, but they were insistent on Victor Robles coming back to the Cubs, and the Nationals went, yeah, good luck with that.
That didn't – I know people on both sides of that, talk to people on both sides of that. That never went very far. That's one of those things. They also talked to the Angels, also talked to him briefly about Wilson Contreras. But these are talks that, as often is the case with the Cubs over the years, these are the kinds of talks where as soon as the Cubs tell you what they want, talks are over. And that was one of them.
Yeah, because Theo always wanted to win every trade. And I
think he wanted to win every
correct.
Trade.
Correct. And I think there are people in the game that went, you know what, Maddie, I think your dog just showed up at my house.
He's quick like that.
I think there are people in the game that actually don't enjoy trade talks with the Cubs, from what I've heard, because they feel like they can't make a deal where, okay, you want to feel like you won a little bit, okay, and we'll feel like we won, but they don't want to feel like they got slaughtered.
Yeah, that's the same thing I've heard over the years, ever since this front office came in. And they've made some deals that actually worked out for other teams. And just go ask the guys on the south side. And you know, they're driving around, and you're driving around a Buick. On the other hand, you know, some of the trades they've made along the way, when they traded Garza, when they traded, they traded Dempster and wound up getting Hendricks. They didn't know what they had. That was an A-ball guy. They traded Feldman, got Arrieta and Strope. They weren't sure what they had then. That worked out for them. I don't think anybody feels like they got screwed on that deal on the other side.
Trading DJ Mayhew didn't work out very well.
That was a stupid friggin' trade. And I've said it from, I said it from day one. I said it before DJ became an all-star or a gold glover. I said it before he became a starter in Colorado.
Okay, so I never have told this on the podcast. I don't believe. Now, again, I've been hitting the head a bunch, but I don't think I have. So Todd Hollinsworth was my partner on TV. I tell him, I'm hearing the Cubs want Ian Stewart. He picks up the phone. I'm watching him in our newsroom. He calls Todd Helton. He's like, TH, it's Holly. Hey, what's up, man? Hey, the Cubs are sniffing around on Ian Stewart. And Todd Helton says to him, oh, my God, please take him. He's the worst. We can't stand him in our locker room. He's the worst. You guys are crazy if you trade for him, but we'd be thrilled. And like a day later, the deal's done.
I'll tell you another story that backs that up. At the winter meetings, when those discussions were going on, I went over to my Rockies counterpart, beat writer over there, who was plugged in. And he says, yeah, you're right. They're talking about Colvin for Stewart. And then he said, they're talking about LeMahieu too. I said, you gotta be kidding me. I said, tell me the story on Stewart. He says, yeah, he's worn out his welcome there. He openly was questioned by his coaches whether he likes the game, whether he cares about baseball, because they questioned his work ethic. They questioned whether he was trying hard. And so I found that out in one conversation that he was a problem already. So they trade for him. That becomes the exact problem with him. And they threw in LeMahieu to get him. In spring training, that first year with the Cubs, I sat down with him for what I thought was going to be a 10-minute conversation. It turned out to be like 25 minutes because the guy's really nice guy. And he gave me all the time in the world, and he gave me long, full answers. And I asked him about the coaches. I said, I had heard that you actually had coaches ask you about whether you liked the game, even liked playing, cared about it. He said, yeah, that's true. He said, but I do. Boy, I really do. I care a lot. And then I noticed he had a tattoo on his arm. And I said, that looks like a new tattoo. He says, yeah, it is. I just got it this offseason. So what's it say? Showed me. It said, there's more important things in life than baseball.
Wow. He's not making his case very well.
In one conversation with another writer, I got a deeper scouting report on this guy's character and clubhouse presence than apparently that entire front office did before throwing DJ LeMahieu in as an extra guy in a change of scenery trade.
Yeah, we just get on best and worst of Theo Epstein.
Yeah, I'll just never forget a teammate telling a former teammate, my partner, that guy's the worst.
Exactly. Exactly.
You got to be kidding me. And we're getting him.
Exactly. And it all played out. It played out.
That ended up getting him released.
And that was just an excuse, honestly. I mean, they relegated him to the minors. I mean, he wasn't doing anything for them. And he got disgruntled, probably somewhat naturally so. And then he took it out on Twitter and they used it as an excuse. Whatever. That's fine. By then, he was out the door anyway. It was a way for them to get out of paying some of the money.
Okay, so both of you, for people that are waiting to see the Cubs improve their roster, the message from this podcast, from three of us who cover this team very closely, is, at least from my seat, don't worry about what the Cubs are bringing in right now. Watch how much money they're moving. And then after the new year, then we could start to see what they bring in. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. And this was, we saw this coming. This, other than last year when people went crazy over free agents, whether it was because of where they were in the CBA or just the class of free agents, people went crazy. Scott Boras had a record off season last year with the Gerrit Cole and those guys. But, other than that, the 2 years prior than that were the slowest free agent markets ever since collusion in the 80s. So this has already been kind of a trend. And with pandemic economics in place, this didn't figure to be a fast moving offseason anyway. And the Cubs' unique situation with their roster and their payroll and the level of players they have who they got to try to move. God, this is going to be an agonizing play all winter for them.
And still waiting to hear on what the rules are even going to be.
Exactly.
Right. Because if the DH, which we all believe will be in there, is in there, you'd hate to see Kyle Schwarber sign like with the Angels and then tear it up as the best DH in the game.
I think you can live with that. I mean, that's the point of non-tendering him, is you can backfill that. Look, you may not get the same level of power out of a left-handed bat by replacing him, but you may get a more contact bat, or you may get a guy that plays left field better, or a guy that's got more defensive versatility, or a switch hitter. You know, you might get – he does one or two things really, really well for you, and you can probably fairly easily replace the rest of it. And you might even be able to replace some of what he does well for you.
Yeah. Although there's a reason he played so much left field, not to knock his fielding. It was, you know, it was good, but you clearly have better fielders. You don't have anyone that you can plug in that's a better bat, even when he was struggling all year. So I'm not convinced that the Cubs are going to be able to bring someone in to plug in immediately and not have the lineup take a bit of a hit. I know we're talking about diversifying and everything like that, but you still need
that's the key,
power
right?
bats.
Now, Maddie, we've talked about this before. What do you think of, so if they gave up the power, and plus this guy sees pitches, he walks, his on base is good. What if they give up that, but they replace it with a guy who doesn't hit for nearly as much power, but you can count on him more contact, and you drop him in the middle of some of those guys. Do you think it could make the lineup better having a guy maybe with less reward on the swing, but a lower risk of strikeouts or maybe bad
1,000%.
Outs?
They need contact.
Yeah. They need people on base when you're
Elmore is a contact guy. Elmore is a contact guy.
No, okay. He's not.
He wasn't this year.
right. But historically, that's been his forte, is he can make contact. But he makes a lot of ground ball out contact.
Well, that's the thing. You can't look at purely contact.
Exactly.
You need line drive hitter. They don't have to be big boppers, but they got to be getting the ball to the outfield. You can't have a guy hitting ground balls to every at bat.
Right.
Gordon makes more contact bumping Mark Gonzalez and everyone else in the press box than that guy does. That guy
is... Hey, that's on Gonzo.
Yeah, exactly. He's not very athletic. Take that, Gonzo. Look, Albert Elmora was a bad choice at pick number 6. But I don't know if Gordon's going to remember this. The Cubs bring a guy in to work out at Wrigley Field. And
Carlos Correa.
Correct. I was there.
And he got drafted number 1. You weren't going to get him anyway.
They did not think he was going 1. They thought Mark Appel was going 1, and they thought they passed on Mark Appel. They took him number 1 or 2 the next year.
Appel went 1 in, that's right, cuz Appel went the next year. That's right. In Grant's draft.
Correct. Appel got drafted by someone else and did not sign,
I think it was the Pirates.
It was the Pirates. And he did not sign, went back in the draft. And the next year, the Cubs sitting at 2, Appel goes 1, they get Chris Bryant.
Right.
So it worked out. But I'm just telling you, man, they thought they were getting Carlos Correa. They thought Appel's going 1, Houston kid. Correa's going to slide to us at 6. And Theo said it's still the most impressive workout he's ever conducted.
Yeah, I was at the ballpark that day. I was still there. It was after the game. It was a day game. Right. And it was long after the game. Everybody had cleared out. And they brought him and another kid in for a workout. But I'm watching this guy just put ball after ball in the seats with this beautiful swing. And I recognized his agent on the field, who I know. So I called his agent while the agent was on the field. I said, "Who's this? What's this?" And he told me who it was. And so I thought, and again, like you, Cap, I mean, I was thinking, you know, he'd be somewhere in that top 10, maybe be there when the Cubs pick, maybe a little higher, a little lower.
Yep.
And lo and behold, 1-1.
Unbelievable. And they left on the board because they were so focused on position players and bats. I believe Aaron Nola went a pick or two or three after them. There were a number of really good arms that they left on the board.
Yeah, that's not who they were picking. They didn't pick arms that high in the draft back then. Oh, they still don't. And maybe that'll be the interesting thing to see if something changes with Kantrovitz now brought in, Dan Kantrovitz. This was his first draft. You can't really count it because it was so weird. But going forward. Yeah, right. Will their drafting philosophy change at all under Hoyer with Kantrovitz now, fully established in his role? Will they take a high first round pick and spend it on a pitcher?
So in that draft, the Cubs picked at 6, taking Almora. The next pick was Max Fried. The following pick was Andrew Haney. David Dahl, Addison Russell was on the board, and you had Mark Appel go after them, but not sign. You still had Lucas Giolito on the board, Corey Seager on the board, Michael Wacha went after them, Marcus Stroman, I mean, Jose Berrios. We talk about some players. There were some guys on the board that they didn't take.
But I'll say this, though. You know, Almora was a commodity at the time. He was a known commodity to a lot of scouts. He had broken the record for most games played in international play for Team USA as an amateur. I want to say A.J. Hinch had that record before him. And so this guy had... He was in every showcase. He played on the highest stages and excelled everywhere he went. He had instincts off the charts. Albert Almora has a skill set. Albert Almora could have been, at this point, a much better performer than he became. And, we could get into the weeds on that. We could speculate on why. But some of it's on Albert, and I hope, because he's a good kid, and I've met his parents. I went down to Miami and did a story on him after he was drafted. Comes from a really good place. I'd like to see him succeed, and he's got a chance. He could be a change of scenery guy that gets the right opportunity somewhere, and maybe it clicks.
And that goes back to what Theo mentioned before he stepped down about how they've got to keep developing guys once they're in the big leagues. And we've seen guys like Wilson Contreras continue to take steps forward. That hasn't happened with Albert Almora. And he's a great fielder. He just has fallen off in the last couple years.
And he's got bat skills too. It's just, I think he gets in his head sometimes. I don't want to speculate too deeply and try to read this guy's mind. Look, we know that he was impacted, even if he doesn't admit it, by that foul ball that hit that little girl in Houston in 2019. The rest of his season wasn't the same. He took that hard. He took it to heart. He's a deep feeling guy, that's not all bad. I don't know how much of it how much of that side of him impacts things, but I'd love to see him get a chance somewhere and really take off and succeed.
And when contact is a big plus for you, slumps are even harder. If you're a power hitter and you're going through a bit of a slump, one home run, and it's like, oh, look, he's fine, he's back. But if you're a contact guy, like a single, it's not the same.
That's a great point. Great point.
Non-tender deadline is tomorrow. We'll have another pod drop later in the week. You guys have a wonderful rest of your day and evening, okay?
You too, Cap.
You too, Cap.
All right, Maddie, keep your dog quiet.
You too.
Exactly.
Trying to talk to each other.
Are you out of that damn sauna yet?
I am. I just got out of it, yeah. My computer was going to overheat, so I took it out of there. All right, you guys be good. That's another edition. Wrapping up of the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, with free ATMs nationwide. For Maddie Lee, for Gordon Whitmire, Tony Gill, and Jeff Nelson, I'm David Kaplan. We will see you later in the week on the Cubs Talk Podcast. See ya.